everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. Just before Aaron showed up here, well, actually, Aaron was here talking. I don't know what it means, showed up. We were talking about the little things in life, like cold brews, friends, casual conversation. It's the little things in life, and that we're back. How you doing?
The time is upon us. The time is upon us, and it's not just us in the U.S. It seems anyway like worldwide there's just a tremendous availability of vaccine, mm-hmm. and it's just a matter of getting it and taking it and then waiting it out. Like, I think that's sort of the problem. Everyone got so excited and they're rushing out and spring break and all that. But I think it's going to, you know, obviously it's going to work out even with the crazy, you know, yep. the numbers aren't as bad as everyone was foretelling. So, I mean, I'm staying cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. I think that's a good approach to it. Aaron and I had just talked, we both got our first jabs waiting the lucrative second one. And then you got, that's when you put up on the board 10 days. Like, yes. You just watch the calendar fall 9 days, eight. And then.
I've heard the symptoms happen after the second one. I don't know. I've heard symptoms happen after the first one too. And I didn't really have anything meaningful. So
yep.
I don't know.
We will
see. Fingers crossed.
We will see. But people didn't join here to talk about jabbing. They joined here to talk about tech. And as you know, as I was putting show notes together, just looking through things, we'll go to the last item first, only because it sort of dovetails with what we were just talking about. So Microsoft announced Build will be officially May 25th through the 27th. We had a ballpark. That is the idea. The only reason I brought that one up first is usually I'm in Seattle, and then usually Aaron and I can hang out in person. But here we are. But next year.
Yep.
It'll be the year.
Yeah, and we predicted that, I think, accurately.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, I think the bearing on that is more or less what we discussed, which is they couldn't see far enough into the future to have the mm-hmm. confidence to put the deposits down and do all the things you have to do to make an in-person event go, coordinate catering, all the things. I mean, millions of dollars, even for a relatively small show, and, you know, so much logistics.
Yep.
And even though the virtual event seems like it would be not as demanding, still has meaningful logistical undertakings, and in some cases, like more extensive undertakings. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of that element to it as well of having to decide and place a bet, which they obviously have. And I think it was a safe bet. I mean, the thing they don't want is to have everyone show up and then some crazy variant comes up and then they're the source of a super spreader event. Microsoft and mm-hmm. you know, connected to Gates Foundation still, it does all this thing with infectious disease, and they're the ones doing this. I mean, could you imagine the tarnish on the halo that they're enjoying so much? No way. So,
yep.
you know, another year soon enough.
I'm hoping we'll see something in the second half, not necessarily Ignite, but I'm hoping that might see the first potentially press event. I think might be one of the first realistically in-person things, because Microsoft has done those and they're 100 people total. And so
that's right, exactly. So it's a little bit smaller event, a little more controlled, simpler logistics, lower risk in terms of the investment, lower risk in terms of the exposure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's probably a pretty safe assumption there.
Yes, we will be crossing our fingers for the fall. But a couple things Microsoft has announced. They are updating not the Windows 10 update cadence, thankfully, but they're updating the Edge update cadence. And effectively what they're doing is Google said, hey, we're going to start updating Chrome every 4 weeks. And Microsoft's like, okay, we'll do that too. But they're introducing an option for the enterprise customers to be able to stretch out their update cadence for the browser to 2 months. So it gives you a little bit more breathing room. I don't know if you have any insights into that, but it seems that's a pretty safe and reasonable route.
Yeah, I mean, and this, you captured a lot of this, I think, in a piece that you wrote that was very good. I guess my take is this aligns to, I think, the whole LTSC versus mm-hmm. SAC kind of mentality that the enterprise needs a little bit of a different touch. And there's risk when you do updates that frequently.
Yep.
But at the same time, because Edge is now Chromium-based, they can't really not update more frequently.
Right.
Right. They kind of have to keep pace with this, because if they don't, then there's a technical debt that accrues.
Yep.
And then the updates are that much more kind of invasive and disruptive. And then problems happen. So consumer windows, if you're getting it monthly, you kind of become a bit of the guinea pig. You become the at-large kind of test pool that happens in production now, which is the way the world works. And I think it's generally a superior model. But for those who have bet their, productivity line of business applications, their day-to-day knowledge worker supporting applications to run their business, don't really have the time to do that. And even every other month seems kind of like a lot. So I think that there's going to be more that will unfold around this, but I think this is more to this future of not a bifurcation of windows, but two very distinct use cases. And the cost of supporting those use cases the right way being high enough that Microsoft is willing to entertain keeping this going for the enterprise that has this unique set of needs. And I think that speaks a lot to those of us who work in this universe and favorably to a large extent, right? I would, if it was up to me, I might do it a little bit differently. But again, there are a lot of smart people over there making informed decisions that, of course, have Microsoft's business interests in mind, but also they're not in the business, and listeners might disagree, they're not in the business of pissing off customers. Maybe they kind of are, de facto, but they don't set out to do that necessarily because that's kind of antithetical to business. So I think this will unfold. This is sort of interesting. This is an interesting one for me.
I think it just kind of comes down to one, you're right. Their hand is pretty much forced. They either have to make a really dramatic decision based on what Google is doing, which isn't in their best interest. And then by doing this, I think there's also a lot less risk updating a browser. I mean, you're not going to, in theory, you shouldn't break your printers. You shouldn't break your networking, like unlike when a Windows update can come and wreak some havoc across your little in your universe. So.
And for the most of the world, like on the consumer side, we're using kind of production websites, other people's stuff, and they need to make it work. And Chrome's very, very popular. So hypothetically, they're going to keep pace with that. And if Edge keeps pace with that, then it should work out okay. Internally, consider, the mortgage company, the large mortgage company that does a lot of line of business apps and drives a lot of their internal apps into a web app environment. They're not going to work that hard on it. They don't want it to change. And I think they're probably going to get a lot of feedback from devs who are saying, this is impossible. This is unsustainable. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, the reality is change happens, and this is going to be the future, is more of this. And as we've discussed with security risk and hacks being more frequent, it's sort of in everyone's interest that we get on this treadmill and start running because it's going to move faster, whether we want it to or not.
Tend to agree. That's kind of it. Like I was like, yeah, that's a valid, rational approach. And so
For
and it
sure. It's interesting. We had internal security and privacy training last week, and it was
always
really
fun.
good. And I mean, yes, right, exactly. And in this case, of course, the mega teams meeting, and this one was sort of vendor specific, and so it was the people who were affected, by, sort of the policies associated with this customer, which were many. And it's so universal though, like all of this awareness that we're building around how we're handling data and how we're handling security and sort of not only the common sense but the how to look out for your brothers and sisters kind of notion. And at the conclusion of it, the kind of takeaways were for our organization anyway. One, we're taking more proactive steps than we're called upon, either policy-wise or legally, to do just to stay ahead of it. Because to the second point, we believe that the future is only going to be more of this, not less of this. The future is not going to be less concern over security and privacy. The future is more scrutiny over security and privacy. The future is more policy and more regulation over this, especially in our universe of tech. So That's sort of the position and posture we've taken, which is to kind of go on offense rather than just be reactive and be in defensive mode, is to see this as a strategic opportunity to inform our people and get ahead, not only protects our own infrastructure and organization, but hopefully casts a favorable light and keeps us on the front end of this machine that's happening with all of our customers, our vendors, our kind of our supply chain, as well as our customer base. So this flies right along with all of that, no doubt.
Yeah, it's tangibly related, but an individual, or we'll just say that we have worked with, their infrastructure was compromised, which caused a trickle-down effect of that organization sending our organization phishing emails. And so, that rising tide raises all boats, or casting a shadow. I'm fully on board with that, because it makes a lot of sense that, hey, Aaron's more likely to click an email that comes from Brad than he is from XYZ, whatever mumbo jumbo. And so, it's sort of everybody's responsibility at the end of the day.
Yes, completely agree. And sort of the increasing sophistication of some of these attacks, how well coordinated some of these phishing attacks are, and things happening in parallel is more what we've seen as well. Which is further this notion of keeping your browser updated is a very good idea, is the attacks are coming in via text, they're coming in via email, and all it takes is for one security, someone to click a link, and one security hole to be exploited, and everyone's in a horrible position, right? And here we go again with all of the stuff we've been talking about with a SolarWinds scenario again, which, yeah, it's what the steps are that happen that are going to stem the tide of this very unfortunate trend, is going to be kind of what I think the next decade is going to be about, really. It's kind of a dark and bleak topic to reflect on, but I think it's our reality. So
It's
that is, keep your browser updated.
We got a little off the script, but there's a great story tie into this yesterday. I'll give out a shout out to our own events team, but we did a backup and recovery virtual event yesterday. And one of the stories that was shared was about Maersk, the large shipping company. They got hit with ransomware, and it took down just a ton of their infrastructure. But what saved them was that they had a data center that had a power outage that wasn't connected, and it was in Africa. And the thing that saved them was they kept the power off. They literally ripped the hard drives out. They had one guy drive like 250 miles to another city where somebody had a British visa and was allowed to go to the UK. They flew the corporate jet down and literally carried these hard drives back to corporate headquarters to save all of their basically their Active Directory configuration, because the moral of the story was you can't recover your environment until Active Directory is back up and recovered. And so these hard drives were so pre like, can you imagine that? Like, you go from, all right, data center's offline, I'm probably going to lose my job, to the most important person in the company in a matter of a minute or
Yes,
whatever.
you go and get the golden eggs and let nothing happen to them. Make this flight go good. Let the customs people be cool. Yes, we had a very interesting similar conversation last week, where we were considering, okay, what is the right strategy in terms of data storage? And from not only sort of an availability perspective, but from a security perspective, from a resiliency perspective. And I said, you know what? What if we just do it on-prem? What if we do it on-prem? Everyone's so cloud addicted. Everyone's so excited about this, and we can't help but just get our nerd genes fired up when we talk about it. But it came back to this idea that it is completely controllable. In some ways, it's more practical. You don't have this runaway, unsurprise runaway cost problem. And you have this ability to turn to the turn off is on your terms. That's the other thing. There were a couple outages with Office 365 and or Azure a couple weeks ago. Were you aware of this? Super frustrating, like super disruptive. Why is our site down? It was in a Scrum, and everyone's like, and the website's down. Well, what the heck? Not our fault. Turns out it's Azure. Awesome. Great. Thanks a lot. The cloud that never goes down. Perfect. Except that it does. And so what do you do? And so it precipitated this discussion in a very heated conversation, and not in a negative or accusatory way, but just in a very passionate way that was examining sort of the principles of some of these technologies and the reality of where we are. And so is it worth keeping hardware around and keeping it running so that we can have this degree of control? But then you're accountable for your own security and a little bit of downtime every now and then, you know, as much as I've just complained about Azure, is probably way better than we would do on our own. So we're back to this sort of trade-off discussion and all of these relevant arguments that so many of us were making. So it's complicated, and
It
the right
is.
answer really is going to be different for everyone. And the right answer is to have more than one answer usually. So it's crazy. The world.
It's never black and white, right? It never is. Like there's benefits and trade-offs to everything, and I think the answer always comes back to it's gray, and in gray in this case is, well, hybrid. I think that's where a lot of
Yes.
places end up.
On that topic I wanted to raise that I think was not necessarily on your agenda was .NET 6. Have
Oh
you been keeping
yes, that's right.
this? .NET 6 release 3 was just announced. Crazy like multi-platform support. So basically it sounds like, and you might have a little more insight than me, so forgive me if I get off the rails here, but it looks like they've got the Xamarin support. So you've got all of the Android, iOS, Mac OS side. Plus, now it appears WinUI 3, they're calling it MAUI, which is a very fun acronym for multi-platform app UI, which I think is actually truthful to what's going on here. And this is exciting to me because finally, you know, one kind of connected framework really does address pretty much all relevant used platforms today on which you deliver an application to humans. So super excited, but the early feedback is not awesome functionality yet.
Yeah,
Good
that's where I
promise.
was gonna head
Sounds
is
like a
that
good report.
it's one of those things. It's when I was reading through some of the documentation, it's like it's a really good paper promise, right? You read through this, you're like, this is the one. Like, this is it. This is going to be huge. And then you start, and I'm not even going to pretend I'm a .NET developer digging through this, but you get through the early feedback, and a lot of it's like, okay, like it's on the roadmap. We gotta let's let the pig roast for a little bit before we go have our luau, if you will.
Right, a little bit of the classic what you hear everyone complain about, which is, you know, amazing marketing message, amazing promise. Right now, that's not really what you get. But it is in preview. And so if in fact that is the goal, Microsoft does tend to have a good record of getting there. And if this is the trend, well, this is, you know, and it stands to reason, it aligns to what we've been seeing in terms of their philosophy of kind of trying to address all the platforms and make everything work on every platform and not have this really overbearing artificial bias to Windows. So I think it's really good and it bodes really well. And depending on how it really plays out, it may make some of this browser issue that we've been talking about in the frequency of release less of an issue, because if you've got, you know, one, you know, integrated platform that allows you to address, you know, all of the app delivery surfaces, then you can maybe think more about Edge. I don't know.
I'll be curious to see the advancements specifically with WinUI 3, because that's another really, really big and profound change. Microsoft doesn't like to talk so much about the future of UWP. But I think the
Yes.
writing has really been on the wall that they're not going to come out and say UWP is dead. But they're definitely, I think, going to come out and say, hey, WinUI 3.0 or 3, whatever versioning the number they ship with, that is the preferred route. That's the method you should go. And
Yes,
here we are.
very much. I really agree strongly with that. And in fact, I think it was when we did this recording together in person at Ignite, or we did. Wait, did we do? Yeah, we did this at Ignite, right? 2 years ago.
2 years.
And that was, I think, the first big WinUI 3 announcement. And I was like, man, this has potential to really be something. So So that's kind of exciting. I mean, we'll see. But yes, I think I tend to agree that that seems to be the direction it's going.
We'll see.
So.
We'll see. Like, to your point, they usually get there. Not
Right.
all, maybe not always on their first release timeline. So
Yeah,
we will see. Speaking of timelines, things that are going to happen expected by the end of the year. Microsoft announced, was it yesterday or the day before, they're going to spend nearly $20 billion when you include debt to buy Nuance. This was, I'm curious because obviously you run a company. Nuance is not, I mean, they're large, but they're not like huge. I mean, they did, I believe, $7 million in net income in Q4 on like $375-400 million in revenue, whereas Microsoft did like $45 billion in revenue, and yet they're paying $20 billion for Nuance.
seems like they're paying up
Yeah, a little
a
bit.
lot. I mean, overpaying maybe, is part of that is I believe Nuance is publicly traded, so they're
Yes, they are.
basically buying them out. And so part of that is respecting their market value and having to pay up for the market value to get the shareholders to buy off on it, literally. But part of it is also the strategic value. And so consider an organization like Nuance, which is really funny because I remember the kind of consumer-facing Dragon commercials that were
Yes,
however long
Dragon
ago
teaches
before there
typing or
was
whatever it
good
is.
voice on phones and things. And I know a lot of people who were super into it then, right? Because it worked the way that everything works now. And the interesting thing is, and I don't know if you use the voice recognition in voice transcription in Windows, but it's not bad. I mean, it's pretty similar to what I get on my Android phone. So, not quite as fluid as the Google service, but pretty good, pretty similar, right? And recognizes punctuation pretty well. So why Nuance? I believe a huge part of it is healthcare.
Yes.
They want to dominate healthcare. Microsoft does well across the enterprise globally. But to go deeper in healthcare kind of facing software would be extremely meaningful to them. The way this pencils financially is to look at not only the upside for Microsoft on the heels of this and how this plays into their kind of top-down field sales strategy, but also just the efficiencies. They can dismantle all of the administration of that organization. It basically takes zero more. In fact, they probably did the math and said, we are going to be able to run this more efficiently than they can with our existing teams and systems. And they'll spend, $1 billion doing the integration project. And, I mean, it takes a lot to get these businesses folded in. There's a natural organ rejection, shall we say. That's a term a friend of mine likes to use talking about M&A. There's
I
a
like it.
resistance a lot of times, which is why, what was that great device, the little twisty flip phone of old that Microsoft bought?
Oh, like they had the Kins, they had the
Danger,
Nokias.
wasn't it Danger? Was that who they
Yes,
bought?
danger.
And that
Yes.
awesome T-Mobile phone?
Yes, danger.
That is a great example of organ failure. Brilliant people. That was when Microsoft was super anti playing with others. They just couldn't get it done. Those days are over for the most part, but there's still sort of this culture clash that happens. And how well will this work? Well, this is an organization that makes software for Windows, so I think that they've got a better chance kind of from the start. And so much of this has nothing to do with software development in Windows. So much of it has to do with how you issue invoices and how you get paid by customers and how you have a sales conversation. And all of that is going to go smoother. And so it really kind of starts making a ton of sense, especially when you put in the multiplier of all the other Microsoft services and solutions that can ride along with it. Microsoft 365 for all these organizations there that are using Zoom or using legacy products, WebEx, go to meeting, whatever all the services are, all gets consolidated. You put your hand on the desk and you slide it across and cut and swipe everything off of it and you replace it all with Microsoft. All these hospitals that are going to be doing more and more services for aging baby boomers who are all going to be entertaining more health complications, more end of life, kind when you start thinking about it in that context, kind of a no-brainer, right? And
Yeah,
it's a stock swap, right? So I mean,
I
it
think you're
doesn't
right.
really cost them that much.
I think you're
Why
right that
would
they've
you
got that.
put all that together? Why wouldn't you?
You got that huge seed play because Nuance is very widely used in the healthcare. You're exactly. I'm pretty sure my doctor uses it as well. And so to your right, it's like, they've at one point they'll flip that little marketing thing over and say Nuance part of Microsoft 365 or whatever, and then they'll probably be like, hey, it's just included, and you can use Teams for free. You're already paying for
Right,
Nuance.
exactly. Integrated into Teams, right? Just like my son's school uses Teams, and they've got Teams for Education that has a couple other little buttons that my Teams doesn't have. And they'll do the exact same thing. Teams for healthcare, you know, it's going to be kind of a no-brainer. And they probably started looking at it and said, "This is unbelievable. Think of all the things that we could do." Or it
The
may have been
opportunity.
Nuance. The Nuance investment banker saying, "This is going to be unbelievable for you. Think of all the things you could do." And the skeptical product managers were like, "Well, sort of." But then someone got excited and said, "Yeah, you know what? This will make a lot of sense." The reality is, at the end of the day, there are not many targets for Microsoft that are this juicy.
Sure,
Number one.
very fair
Right.
point.
The software landscape isn't that robust that they have that many to choose from. And then you add to that sort of the risk of Microsoft trying to do this on their own, right? Microsoft loves businesses that have enough momentum that they have what you might consider kind of critical mass, and then they have the ability to move quickly from, say 100 million to 1 billion, or 1 billion to 5 billion, and that's what really gets, senior leadership excited, is these, and in that way, safer bets versus these internal kind of moonshot bets like SharePoint that kind of started as a long shot and then became the quickest to $1 billion, I believe, in Microsoft
Something
history.
like that.
This kind of is a lower risk play, even though it costs a lot of money. They're not saying, okay, we're going to go spend 100 million in cash, 500 million in cash to see if we can get it there. They're saying we're going to spend 16 billion in stock, and we have a sure thing, and we're for sure going to make it way more profitable, and it's definitely going to add to top line and bottom line. Like, it kind of starts making a lot of sense, right? So I like it. I like the deal.
The one thing that is in this that we will never see, but I would love to see, is somewhere inside of Microsoft, I can guarantee you, there's a PowerPoint deck where somebody made the initial pitch that we should buy this company. Like, I would love to see how whoever that courageous person was that walked into Amy's office and be like, Amy, I need $20 billion. And she's like, what? Like, and then what's the, like, I would love to see that PowerPoint deck.
Right. So I bet, in fact, Brad, there are probably two decks. There's one deck that said, we need to build a medical transcription service for Microsoft 365. And it was a whole mega, over the top strategy deck with all of the business points and the use cases and the personas. And it was tied out and rationalized with the, healthcare team. That's one deck. And then another deck is some courageous person, as you pointed out, who said, let's go buy Nuance. Here's the business rationale. And some product unit manager is sitting in their, 18 person meeting, arms crossed. This person gets 5 minutes to pitch it. It gets buried. And then it comes back around, right? It comes back around to, the venture integration team, or maybe, I don't know, comes across whoever's desk, maybe comes through the field, and then it gets bubbled up. And yeah, some senior marketing manager is like, I wrote this deck 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. But part of it is timing, right? 2.5 years ago, it probably wouldn't have worked. 2.5 years ago, Office 365, M365 wasn't as much of a thing as it is now. It was a huge thing, but it wasn't at the state of maturity. Teams wasn't really much of a thing 2.5 years ago at
Exactly.
all. So a lot of this does have to do with that. So those decks, just had the unlucky misfortune of bad timing, right? And that's all part of this. Look at, you know, what A16Z Andreessen Horowitz always says, you know, it's the market always wins. You know, you take the best product with the best team and with less awesome timing and pit it against the worst, you know, team with a marginal idea with great timing, that latter team always wins.
Yep.
And that's sort of maybe part of the situation here. Also part of the justification for this seemingly outsized price. So kind of a lot of factors in here.
And one last minor thing, which maybe we can say for next episode, is Microsoft this week launched this guy right here. I actually have one.
I was going to ask if you got one and how it was.
I do. I haven't even had it for 24 hours yet.
Why don't we do like 1 minute and then we'll do another run at it.
So
does it really have 19 hours of battery life?
I haven't even had it for 19 hours.
I mean, oh, you just got it. You got it yesterday.
No, I got it late. Well, maybe technically I might have had it for 19 hours. Actually, I got it about this time yesterday. But I mean, it's like fresh out of the box. So the one thing I'm struggling with, candidly, is like, how am I going to compare this? Because I have the last generation 15-inch Surface Book with an AMD 3000 series processor. And I'll tell you right now, it's garbage. Like, the performance is terrible. The performance on this compared to that, I can already tell just by, you know, very basic usage, it's way better, way better.
And do you have the Ryzen or do you have the 11th gen Intel?
Ryzen. So it's got an R7, the Ryzen AMD 4000 series. Now, the problem is that the 5000 series just came out. So it's like, do I compare this to like what somebody else could go spec out, or do I compare it to, and unfortunately I don't have an Intel version to compare it head to head with. I think that might be a really interesting lineup too.
Yes.
The battery life though, I think is going to be key, because the battery life on the other one, no joke. Like if I was working like how I work within like Photoshop and a lot of media rich stuff, 2 to 3 hours and it was toast.
Well, and did I understand correctly as well, the price point is like around $1,000?
So it starts around 1,000. This one is higher than that, though. So the $1,000 is for the Ryzen R5 13.5. This one is probably, I'm shooting from the hip here. Actually, I might even have the spec sheet. Hold on, people, dude. If you're driving, well, maybe, or sitting at your desk.
There's other interesting things, too, while you're poking around. The Apple M1 processor now parallels released basically a hypervisor to do Windows 10 on ARM on M1. So that's interesting.
Oh, it just and dropped my background.
we also, I just read a thing too, that they are just getting a Linux distro to run on M1. So we sort of have this crazy, interesting landscape evolving in terms of PC procs, platform evolution. Yeah. Furthermore, I would be going back to the Surface 4. I'd be very curious how that 11th gen Intel behaves. There's a monumental difference between 10th gen and 11th gen.
Yep.
So 11th gen i7 would be... could be, you know, give you a whiplash, wear a helmet when you use that computer,
so
you know, kind of thing.
This particular one is $1,699.
16, all right. So, yeah, I mean, they've priced it in that band of higher-end PCs, and you know, we'll just have to get your feedback and see if it's really worth it. So that'll be the...
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to battery life is going to be... I don't think it's going to be, again, shooting from the hip, minimal usage. I don't think the performance is going to blow anybody away by any means, but compared to last gen, it's fine. Or it's even better than fine. I think it's going to come down to, is the battery life there? Microsoft says 19, up to 19 hours. Knowing Surface, my guess is that it's probably around like 10-ish real world.
Right.
That's usually like, it's usually like you divide the number by two and add one, and usually about the real number.
But it's getting more like a phone, right? Where you've got a once a day overnight kind of charge. And that would be positive, you know, especially for the road warriors among us, which, you know, that time's coming back. So
yeah, that's the
super interesting. Super interesting.
Well, on that cliffhanger, everybody, You'll have to check back in next time. Good, Aaron, we very much appreciate you hanging out with us, giving us your time. To everybody else, there'll be links and comments and things on the description and in the podcast post that you should definitely go check out. But we will be back here in a couple weeks, and we'll be talking more about Surface Laptop 4 and build. We'll be probably right before build happens. So hopefully we'll have some good nuggets that have come out before then. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. We'll catch all of you right back here next time.